everyone. Welcome to Recovering Relationships. My name's Katie, and this is my mom, Janice, and we're a mother-daughter duo sharing the real work of repairing family bonds broken by addiction. So we're here today, and we're going to talk about rebuilding trust. So, mom, you want to get us started?
I would love to. Just to make it clear, I am the one in recovery, and I now have about 12 years. I think it'd be nice if we started a little bit with our why. Why are we doing this? I know we've taped two episodes bef earlier than this, but we're starting to get into our swing of things. And I would just like to expand upon that for a minute because I think it's important for people to know that I'll speak for myself, am very passionate about this topic, about helping families repair relationships, because I'm also a social worker and I've worked in and out of this field for years. And what I found when I got sober 12 years ago is that not enough had changed really in family treatment. And now, what I find as a mom in recovery, I still see so many families that haven't reconciled. And I believe that all of us really do want our moms back. I listened, Katie, to our previous two episodes, and I've got some little clips that, well, I think touch people's hearts where you say, one, you had to mourn the loss of your mom, and that ultimately you still wanted me back, which
Yeah.
is very reassuring because one of the things that I hear from people like at my meetings and support groups when I go as a peer and not a counselor or therapist is I hear people say, well, I've just given up. And, I think there's always hope. I mean, I don't want people to set themselves up to get hurt, but I don't want people like me in recovery to give up on our family members if there's a glimmer of hope. So one, I think there's a need. Two, I do this because it helps me give my pain a purpose.
Yeah.
It helps me. I still carry a lot of guilt and shame over the fact that I became an alcoholic later in life and that I put my kids through exactly what I went through as a kid. And the best way, besides making a living amends to you guys, but the best way I think that I can make up for that is by turning my experience into purpose, into sharing this and helping others. So, my why is complicated, but it's based on wanting to help families and break the patterns of generational trauma and work a living amends. And the bottom line is, if anyone out there is in recovery, we talk about one of the best ways to maintain your recovery is to do service work, is to give what you got. And a lot of people did a lot of good things for me early in recovery. And if it weren't for them, I wouldn't be here. So I'm giving back. And that's my why. But Katie, why are you willing to bear everything in this format?
I think that's so well said, your answer of why. And there were a few points in there I'd love to touch on, but yeah, you very well said. My why would be in support of you. And I know, so I want to apologize that it's been a while since we started this podcast. And so I'm kind of lacking on su my support here. But I, shortly after we started the podcast, got a major promotion at work. And so, and a major promotion in the hype of our busy season. So I kind of had to jump into the deep end there and hit the ground running. So we haven't had quite as much time. But my why is in support of you. You've done so much for me and my brothers are over the years, and your recovery is so crucial to us. And so I want you to be successful in everything you're doing, and I truly believe in the book you wrote. And I think that this can help promote it as well. So I want to support you first and foremost, and if that leads to as well, like helping others and helping show other children, adult children of alcoholics, that there is hope, that you can rebuild trust and recover from all of the damage that gets done in addiction, then that would be really awesome. So.
Now I have to pause for a minute. There's thunder in the background, and it may, if anyone's
Cannot hear
watching
it.
this, okay, but I rolled my eyes in the middle of what you said, and I don't want anyone to think that's a reflection of something that you said, but I did one of these like, I value what Katie says. I also am very appreciative of her being willing to do this because when I speak, and when I talk to other parents in recovery, they want to know what it's like for the children who have successfully worked through this. So people I know want to hear your voice. They want to hear about it. So, and then the most popular topic people ask me about is trust. How do I repair the trust with my, loved ones, and being, kind of an academic at heart, I had to, of course, look up what the definition of trust was, which was ridiculous. So I asked ChatGPT, and
Love
then I asked it to put
it.
in very plain language. And it said, the plain definition is, I can rely on you over time. And I thought, oh, that makes sense. And then I have to, of course, expand upon it because I think it's so much more than that. I think for me, trust is the belief in something or someone that they're going to do what they say, they're going to be consistent in their behavior, and most of all, they're going to, when I expose myself, or become emotionally vulnerable, that they're not going to hold that against me, that they're safe for me to share my feelings with. And that's trust in base in the basis of like a relationship. If it was, do I trust my auto mechanic? That's a different kind of trust. And yes, I do, because I have a great auto mechanic. But so that's kind of my definition. Katie, what's your definition? How would you describe it?
My definition of trust would be the assurance, and the lack of doubt that someone is going to do what they say and follow through, and that there's like not only like the actions behind it, but it's just like a sense of peace. And that you just know that it'll be all right. Like, there's, I guess it's
Sounds
mostly
like
the
comfort.
assurance part of it. It's like you don't have to question it. You don't have to, be like, oh, is this gonna happen? Is this, you know what I mean? Like, analyze, go through like anxious thoughts of what could go wrong. Like, trust to me feels safe. Trust equals safety. Trust feels secure. Yeah, just not followed by any doubts
Okay,
or questioning.
all right. So, in early recovery, obviously, you lost trust for me when I was in active addiction. And we haven't talked about that a whole lot, but the focus of this is on moving forward. So, in early recovery, Was it hard to trust me?
Yes. And that was it was partially to do with you know what I mean, the boundaries, and that you don't wanna, if someone wronged you, you wanna make sure that you're prepared for if it happens again. So you're not just like immediately letting someone in to just like kick you back on the floor and like disappoint you. And so I think that when trust is broken, it's natural to build boundaries, and to not just let someone back in and have that assurance with someone. And so in active addiction, there's also just so many false promises. There's so much active lying to hide the addiction. And in the final stages of addiction, when addiction is the worst of the worst, it's like the lying is just blatant. You know what I mean? Like you can't get away with it. So, when someone is actively lying to your face and you're fully aware of it, yeah, just because they get sober, doesn't mean that you're going to forget all of the lies that were told to you beforehand. And so it can be really difficult. And I could see how
Exactly.
now on this side of
Which
things,
is,
but I could see now that it could be frustrating for someone early in sobriety as well to, and they could probably feel at a loss. I don't know. What do you, I mean,
well, no, absolutely. I think that was like when we were going to get to the part, the first steps to rebuilding trust. The first thing I was going to say is to have reasonable expectations. I mean, I was committed to sobriety within the first week of treatment. I mean, really, upon the day that I went to treatment. And actually, the months before when I was trying to get sober through 12-step programs, I was committed, but. And I wanted you guys to trust me. But once I went to treatment, I assumed that you would trust me. And so the first mistake I made was that expectation that because I'm here, I'm safe, I'm doing this, I'm taking this huge leap. You know, to me, it was a big leap. Probably wasn't as much of a leap for you guys, but that you should automatically trust me. Like this. You've said this before, like a switch should be flipped. So, the first mistake that I made was, you know, expecting, and I didn't expect forgiveness, but I expected you guys to believe that I was committed to this. So, yeah, so that's, I think that's kind of the first word of warning for someone in early recovery. Any other thoughts that you want to have about trust generally as like a global concept? Because here's where I'm coming from. Some of us inherently aren't trusting people, and some of us are inherently over-trusting. Do you think that plays into how family members might respond when their loved one gets sober or enters
Totally.
recovery?
Yeah, I've noticed how I over the years have changed from growing up. I was very trusting, very gullible. you know what I mean? Like I didn't think that, like growing up with the belief that like humans are inherently good, all of them. You know what I mean? And I think that that should still be the belief. You know what I mean? But like I genuinely, full-heartedly believe that. And I was like, how could someone ever do X, Y, or Z. And so I, you know what I mean? If someone said something, I believed it. Now, you know what I mean? Now, being the child of an alcoholic, being the general manager of 50 employees, I feel like you don't have my trust until you earn it. So my trust
Okay,
is
and
not
that's a great
given.
question.
My trust isn't just given free heartedly. Like if I'm, yeah, now I feel like people have to earn my trust, and it's, I don't know, it's just something that's happened over time. It's,
No, I think that's very valid. And I think that's something that myself, as a person in recovery, and anyone else listening to this needs to hear that. Nothing's granted, nothing's given. And I don't see anything wrong with the fact that I had to earn your trust back. So, I think that's all right. I tend to be, I think at my core, untrusting of a person. And that may have shaped some of my growing up, which is a whole adult child of an alcoholic issue. That is for another time. So I'm going to slip for a moment into social work mode, and I'm going to throw out my top list of things, and I want to hear your contribution to them. So this is unrehearsed, and you can jump in, deny, whatever. So I think expectations is one of the fundamental aspects that when we're trying to repair trust with our family members, I've got to have reasonable expectations or no expectations, you know? A reasonable measure, a measure of success. What is a reasonable measure of success for me to interact with my kids? All right, let's get back to the basics. So I'm rambling. The next thing is to become a good listener. Not no much, which listening is 90% of communicating, but I think that one of the key things that we can do to help build trust with our loved ones is to really listen and to listen beyond that surface level conversation. Okay, so let's switch gears. I'm going to put on my social work hat and I'm going to throw out some basic tips and tools to help rebuild trust. And Katie, I want you to jump in and contribute your point of view of this. The first one we've already talked about is having reasonable expectations and probably manageable goals so that you set goals that are attainable. Like one goal might be they respond to my text, you know? Next thing I think is communication. And this is important on a variety of aspects, but probably the most important aspect of that is to be a good listener. I think, and it is my nature to keep talking, to finish people's sentences, to interrupt, right, Katie?
Well, same.
So I think it's important to learn to pause and slow down, and probably more so than anything, when the other person is sharing their thoughts or feelings, to make sure you affirm that you've heard what they've said before you move on. So that if, I can't think of a good example. Can you think
But
of a good
you, well,
example how
yes,
it's
I
important?
actually think that you raised us with the basics of this, like an apology. You always said, you can't just say, I'm sorry for something. You had to say, I'm sorry for blank. And what did you, it was, and I'll do
I
better
would be, I'm
next time
sorry
or
for
something.
this. This is what I did wrong. Right. And this is what I hope to do next time.
Yeah.
And then now, of course, I would add to it, what do you want to share? What is your opinion of that? What do you need from me?
Yeah.
I'm all about a good apology and amends.
Right.
And you do the same thing with communication so that, if your spouse comes home and goes, "I'm tired. I really don't want to take out the trash right now," that you don't immediately react to me like, "Well, just do it. It's easy." Just be like, "Okay, pause, think, maybe don't say anything, or maybe be like, it sounds like you're tired. What can I help you with?
Yeah.
Or what is this really about?" To
Right.
clarify.
Yeah.
And then on a more sensitive level between like a parent and a child, oh gosh, I was so sensitive to you guys in early recovery. And I would, here's a mistake I made. If you didn't return my text or my phone call or were short with me on the phone, I didn't stop to think they might be having a bad day. They might have just gotten a bad grade on exam. They might be tired. No, automatically I made the assumption that it had to do something with me.
Yeah.
So let's ask for clarity as opposed to making an assumption when it comes to communication.
Yeah.
I think that which leads right into my next on my list, and that is respect to feelings. I learned this from my sponsor. I talk about it all the time. That you have to honor the other person's feelings, opinions about actions, behaviors. Does that make sense?
Yep,
So
definitely.
that I can't, like, I might say to you, "Katie, ooh, you look really tired today." And you could come back and go, "No, it's not tiredness. It's da 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 da."
Yeah.
And then I need to hear that and drop my initial assumption, opinion, and go with what you've said. That's a very safe.
Yeah.
Do you ever,
I think it definitely at a
can you think of an example where I was not respectful of your feelings?
not any specific example, but I want to touch back on just the full concept. I definitely agree that like an apology and it takes two. Like it takes the acknowledgement of the other person's stance and perspective and their feelings on the situation. Like you fully need to understand the other person's feelings in order for like an apology to be like the best apology to be received. An apology that I would have like an aversion to is an apology that's followed by so many listed excuses. And it's like you're not seeing the why of why I'm upset and why there's a need to apologize. You're instead giving a list of excuses of why you are now justifying your actions behind it, which like yes, there's like a need to understand that as well if you're on the other side of it and like receiving the apology. Like it's nice to then get a bigger picture to see where they're coming from. But if that's what encompasses the apology, then it doesn't feel like an apology. It feels like they're trying to justify their actions in the apology,
Or deflect.
rather than saying, I'm so sorry. I now see that my actions then led to this, and this. And that must have been really frustrating, rather than saying it was X, Y, and Z that made me make this decision and I fell short. You know what I mean? So I think that it really takes acknowledgement from both sides. And then, the person receiving the apology can be like, well, now, I mean, I guess. You know what I mean? There might have been some circumstances, and I can understand that. But the person giving the apology doesn't have to make that list the focus. It should be like understanding the repercussions that followed.
Right. So listen, absorb before you respond.
Yeah.
Right? Because the person receiving the apology is not going to hear the explanation until they felt heard. Does that is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, in a way,
You
I
need to
think
feel
both
heard and
people
affirmed.
want to feel heard. The person receiving the apology
Yeah.
doesn't want just a list of excuses. They want their feelings to be heard as well. What followed
Right.
from whatever happened.
Right. And that just leads right into my next one. You got to own your mistakes. So if I lead with, I made a mistake. I'm 20 minutes late from work and I could have called, but I was listening to a really interesting podcast and didn't want to stop it. You know what I mean? So
Ownership is
to own
also
the
a huge
mistake.
part. Like literally, I am so quick to like get over something if someone's just like, "Oh shit." Sorry. Oh shoot. I forgot this. You know what I mean? Like if you just
Yeah.
say, "Oh no. Oh my God. Oh, how did that happen?" Ah. Like
Right. So
that's way
sincerity.
better than being like, "Oh, well, da 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 da." It's like, "Oh my gosh." Just say, "Oh my
Just
God.
own it.
Won't happen again."
Right. And making an effort. And that leads me to my last one on this list, because I wanted to keep the list really short and simple and easy. And that was all of these little small things add up, right? So,
And they add up towards rebuilding trust.
right. I have this new little metaphor that I call a trust bank. If you think about it, and it's not an original idea, I can't even remember where I heard it from. But if you think about building trust, it's like making deposits in a bank. And that as you make those little deposits, it's hard to see any big returns. You can't go out and buy a new car. It takes making lots of little deposits over time. The more deposits you have in that stockpile, it makes those mistakes that you made a little, I think, maybe not, a little more tolerable for the other person. Does that
No,
ring true? Like, so if for us, I know it took me a long time to rebuild trust with you guys, and it's a complicated situation. But let's say, okay, here's a great example. In 2016, you and I took a cruise. I'm very frugal. We had an inside cabin with no windows. And in the middle of the night, one night, I got up and was entirely lost in the cabin. And I could not find my way to the bathroom. And I was trying not to wake you up. But after a few minutes, I hear you say something like, "Are you drunk? Like, what is up?" And it surprised me. Because obviously I wasn't drinking, but that behavior, I'm sure me stumbling around in the middle of the night reminded you of a past hurt. So the point being twofold. Old trust damage gets triggered. Events can trigger distrust, which really had, I mean, and thankfully I was surprised, but it didn't hurt my feelings. I don't think so. And I think you got over that quick. Were you reassured pretty quickly that I wasn't drinking? I was just clumsy.
Yes, I'm sure I was. I honestly
So.
don't recall the situation, so it must not have been some like a memory that I ingrained deep into my mind. Like I was mistrusting
Right.
of the situation. But I could see why I would ask that, and I could see why you held on to
Right.
it
Right.
because it was like a moment of me questioning your sobriety. When you had at that point
Right.
had,
3 years.
okay, I was gonna guess a couple years, but yeah, 3 years by then.
3 years. Yeah. And obviously, since I still remember it, it still is a little wound. I think the
Yeah,
wound, not
I'm
to get too
sorry.
self-analytical here, though, is no, it's fair. And that's really a lesson that we can share here, is that I still carry guilt and shame about how I hurt you, how I hurt my kids. And it can be triggered on the other side too. But I'm happy to share that story because I think other people will benefit from it, you know? I don't think it's the last time. I would guess I've been through some difficult challenges in life, and I would guess that there have been times when you guys have, my children have wondered, like, I wonder if mom's going to get through this, you know, with not being tempted to drink. So I think those things come up, and it's okay. It's okay.
I think
So,
that's definitely true. I think that there's been, you know what I mean? Like the passing of a parent. I think that those times are really difficult. And I think that when you broke your ankle, like that was the time that we were really fearful. I was fearful. And in order to help, I think both of us, but it probably was to assure me and have me not worry as much, as like you gave me the prescriptions. Like I'm the one that probably went to the pharmacy and filled it, and I was the one that kept your pain medicine pill bottle. And I did not withhold any pain meds any more than the doctor prescribed, you know what I mean? Because that would be something that I would say a sober person, like that's a line, that
Right.
would be, you know,
But that's a
questionable,
great example
because
too.
I think, but you kind of feathered yourself off of it, took less of the pain meds than you were prescribed. And that gave me assurance. But had you been in enough pain to take them as prescribed, like, don't think that that would have been an issue, but that was a moment that I think that we were both nervous about. Like we were scared.
I was nervous about. Yeah, absolutely. It was the first time I'd been on mood altering medicine since I got sober. And that was at 4 years of sobriety. And that was reassuring, I think, to both of us. That was a good trust building opportunity, you know? And I
That
have to
was.
say, Katie did a great job. She happened to be home between her travelings. And this is definitely a case where I became the child and she became the parent. Because I don't do well when I'm in pain. But back to the pain medication. It was good for me too because it was the first time and it made me nervous. I've seen a lot of people, you know, relapse because of their chronic pain or pain medication. And I really thank you for that. I probably have been. I don't know if I've been on pain medication since then. But I think that's a good tool to use.
But don't
So,
go
and
break
that could
your
be
ankle just
okay.
in order to, you know, test it and try and
I
get
do
some
not like
trust. Let me
pain. So,
go.
no.
Don't
If you know
advise
me well,
there.
you know
But
I hang on to every handrail.
It was a
No,
good
I'm
trust activity
pitifully
for us.
careful. I do still climb mountains, and I've taken a good few falls there, but whatever. Okay, let's get back to little things you can do to build trust. I've rambled on social work point of view. From the family member point of view, what are things early in sobriety that, as a family member, you feel would help you trust your loved one more?
Just generally following through with what you're gonna say, what you do say, actually follow through with it. Don't overpromise if you can't deliver. So be realistic in your expectations of what you're able to deliver, but just meeting all of those things that you say you're gonna do, just do it. And gradually, little by little, over time, I think the trust comes back through a lot of that. But putting in effort
What
is
about,
also a really important part.
okay, effort's key. What about thinking ahead and telling, like, for a while, off and on, you live with me in my early recovery. And I think we were pretty good at communicating with each other what we were doing and where we were going. Do you think, hands? Here's what I'm going to do. Or, and I've talked about this a lot, how I and you guys still have, find a person, find a phone on my phone. Do you think those things helped initially? That if you doubted me, you could check up on me.
Yes. I don't recall tracking your location that often. But I think that that was a tool that helped my younger brothers. And so I think that that definitely can be helpful. But checking in is also nice. Yeah, I think generally as
Do you
well,
want to
just
hear
like
about,
showing
here's a good
interest
question.
in.
Do you want,
I think our connection is a little bit delayed. Might be my internet again. But I think as well,
okay.
just
Yeah, it
showing
was
general
delayed earlier.
interest in your loved ones as well, and not being so selfish and so self-absorbed, and be like, be aware of the different activities your loved ones are involved in. Know what's on their plate. Know what different life things they're juggling. So if they don't respond to your text, you don't get your feelings hurt. You realize they might have kids of their own. They might be, going through busy season at work. They might have, they might be planning their best friend's baby shower. They might be doing a number of different things that have occupied their attention. They might be going, off the grid, cell-free. Who knows? But I think checking in with each other is good. But just awareness of what other people are also going through. You might be in your sobriety and you might have a lot on your plate. And it's a very self-absorbed time. So just knowing that other people also have other things going on in their lives, even if they're not struggling with addiction.
I
It,
agree.
I guess,
I agree.
struggling with
All
addiction
right.
themselves, but through a loved one. So.
All right. I kind of want to round this up. We're at a good stopping point. And I wanted to start introducing like a call to action. Sorry, I'm petting the dog over here because of the storm, trying to reassure and offer comfort and love to the dog. But here is my idea for a call to action that I would recommend. And we'd love it if any of our listeners sent me an email at my website, janicejohnsondowd.com, and tell us how this went for you. But maybe just to reach out and ask your loved one, what's one thing that I could do for you this week that would help build trust? And so I'm going to ask you that right now, Katie. I can think of one thing I want to do for you this week to help build trust, and that would be to watch your dogs. But is there something else that I can do for you this week to help build trust? Because our relationship can always improve, right?
Yeah.
And we're always going to have our ups and downs. So what's one thing I could do for you, Katie?
I was actually just thinking about the dog situation too. That was going to be my example of this. I'm like, oh, you're watching my dogs. And in this situation, one of your dogs doesn't get along well with one of my dogs. So there is some nervousness when they end up mixing. So one thing that you could do to help build trust while our dogs are together would be
I'm thinking to,
Just send me a
do
bunch of pictures
double
of
board the gate.
Lola. Maybe just send me a bunch of pictures of Lola to know that she's happy and healthy.
Okay. So, any closing thoughts about the importance of building trust for a relationship?
I think just
I
having
see.
patience, and consistency. Consistency, 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 and then just letting time heal. Following through with what you say, being consistent and being patient, and with time, hopefully it'll get better.
It will get better. I mean, I'm terminally hopeful. So our relationship has really blossomed into something else. And I would like to share with the listeners, Katie, you can cut this out if you want. But not only has Katie had this huge promotion and a great job opportunity, she got married
Hey.
recently. So Katie Dowd is now Katie Walker. And congratulations, Katie. I couldn't be happier for the two of you. And I will say that your husband has earned my trust over
Oh.
these years of your relationship. So, yay, Luke.
Yay.
Any closing thoughts? We really appreciate you guys listening in. I would like to throw out next week's topic or the next time we tape as. And Katie doesn't know this yet, but one of the things she said in her one of the earlier episodes was she talked about how painful it was to mourn the loss of a parent who is still alive. So I thought we might talk about grief and mourning in the recovery process.
That
It's
would
an
be
idea.
interesting. I think that would be a great topic idea. Really interesting. You've studied grief a lot. And so,
I struggle with grief. Yeah.
yeah, struggled with it, studied it in turn. And so I think that that would be an interesting topic to dig into. But I just want to thank you all so much for tuning in and joining us this episode. And don't forget, my mom wrote a book on this stuff. It's called Rebuilding Relationships and Recovery. You can order it on Amazon or you can shop any local bookstores. It's in Barnes and Noble, Books a Million, all the good things. You can order it online anywhere. All right. Thanks
And
so
check out
much.
my blog. And thanks so much for being here.
Or check my mom out at a local conference. She's touring the
Oh,
country.
that's true.